Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man. Hey guys, welcome back to the Leverage Podcast. We've got a very special guest today, a good friend of mine, Brian Bajan. He's the founder of thefearlessman.com, and he's been coaching for well over a decade. Brian specializes in presence work, getting people out of their head, to stop the overanalysis into a deeper, more conscious relationship with their body. And over at Fearless, dating is just one of the specialties. The confidence and other internal work Brian has created is truly universal and is often focused on career, health, and other areas of life. And I've known Brian for, it's been like 15 years, I think. And he describes himself as a lifelong student, and I can certainly attest to that. I know that the work he's always working on himself and creating new groundbreaking things with clients, so I'm really excited to have him on the show.
It's awesome to be here. It's been way too long. I remember 10 years ago when we were doing a lot of work, or 11, 12 together, and it's just interesting. It's kind of like everything's coming full circle, you know?
Yeah, we, Brian and I just spent some time together in Greece. We had a villa out there and had a bunch of people over and crazy party, and it was great to reconnect with you
And it's funny because I'm living in the building that we ran a business out of over 10 years ago now, too. Again, and I didn't think I'd ever be back in this building. It's a great building. It's beautiful. But I just think it's all kind of interesting that, you know.
That's crazy. I didn't even realize I knew you moved out, obviously, because we lived there together. But I didn't realize you had recently moved back in and to an upgraded unit, the best unit in there over at he's at R2 Living in Marina Del Rey, if anyone wants to stalk him.
No, I'm going to get all these stalkers. No.
Apartment 104. No, just kidding.
it's an amazing building, though. There's I'm seeing more celebrities here than when we lived here. I'm seeing them coming in and out, and which is cool. Whatever. I don't care.
Well, that whole area of Marina Del Rey, like, remember when we moved in, it was kind of like one of the first buildings to kind of like, that neighborhood was definitely going through a gentrification process. So
yep.
I'm sure it's
still is. There's still more buildings going up. I don't know how they're going to handle all the traffic and the people, but it's an amazing building for creative types. If you really want to be creative, you really like living that kind of a little bit of a New York loft in Los Angeles by the beach. It's a perfect building for that.
Yeah.
And I'm always on the go anyway. So it's perfect for, you know, just, I'm in, I'm out, I'm in, I'm out, back on the road again like yourself, and never stopping. So
one of the things that I'm always talking about on the podcast is leveraging your resources. One way that I do that all the time is when I'm gone, I Airbnb my place. I don't think you can Airbnb there, though, right?
They have it in the contract. Not allowed to.
Of course.
Whether or not they force that or not, I don't know. But it directly says no Airbnb.
It doesn't say maybe no VRBO or HomeAway, does it? No.
There you go. It does. I don't know about that. It's funny because it's a live work building too. It's a live work loft, right? And so you think, oh, Airbnb would be fine, but no. You know, you can do all this crazy stuff here. I've seen people open beauty salons. I see people running meditation centers. I see people all that, but you can't Airbnb.
I'm sure because it's live work, you could get around that somehow. But
yeah,
I don't know. Whatever.
I could make good money on this place. I mean, it would go for some high dollars right here by the beach. So I would like to do it when I'm traveling, because we're traveling more and more every year, anyways.
And you guys can't see the patio. They've got an 800 square foot patio, you know, in front of where the camera is, with the view of the Hollywood sign. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I would turn the camera and show you. It's four stories up. But the problem is it's all dark out there right now, and I got this lighting I hooked up out there. I got to refix it. Somebody screwed it up when they were cleaning the windows outside. So
yeah, but it's a cool spot. So tell us more about Fearless, and, you know, give us a little backstory. How'd you get into personal development? I know for you it's been, you know, a lifelong process. But, you know, like a 5-minute condensed version of how you came to be, you know, Brian, the world traveler, coach, world-renowned hypnotherapist?
You know? That's a good question. When I was a child, I was super shy. I didn't talk to anybody. Hated that. So as I became a young adult, I started reading every book on the shelf and trying to figure out how to date, how to be more confident, how to get over my shyness, how to get over my fear. And that's really where it started. And I spent years doing that. Ended up in a hypnosis school. I was doing a corporate job. I was miserable, sick. I was always sick. You knew that. Always these body gut issues. Now I understand a lot of what I had. I didn't know what I had back then, but I had a lot of gut issues, damage to my gut and things like that. And so because of that, I just wanted to change. And I became determined, and I became an avid studier. Pain is the best motivator. I mean, you're in a lot of pain, you want to change. And so I was always researching, studying, learning more about self-esteem, confidence building, and I ended up one day becoming a hypnotherapist in a hypnotherapy clinic. And I did that for over a year, where I was seeing like 5-6 clients a day, doing a lot of weight loss hypnosis, a lot of self-esteem stuff, a lot of stop smoking stuff. And then took my first dating workshop, Pickup 101 back in the day, because I was working on my confidence around dating. And I didn't understand. I knew I was missing something, and that's where I met you. And
that was my first workshop as a instructor in training.
Yeah, I remember in West Hollywood.
Yep,
they had the dating workshop for guys to learn how to pick up women in the boys' gay bar. Yeah,
it was at the that Hilton, or is it a Hyatt? Right on.
I think it was a Westin, wasn't it? Westin.
I think it's a Hilton. Whatever. Maybe it is a Westin. It's the hotel right on Santa Monica Boulevard in La Cienega. You know, in the yep. heart of fucking Boys Town. You know, the hotel was just completely full of trannies, and
we would have to hike the hill to get to the Sunset Strip to get to a decent a bar that was straight.
Yeah.
And we come back down to the Westin, and we would be we'd get hit on our way back home, and guys would be hitting on. I remember getting hit on in the elevator and stuff like that.
It was good for my confidence, because I would strike out with the girls, and then I'd come back, and you know, a couple dudes would catcall me or make some remarks. I'm like, all right, yeah. At least I got that.
I still got it. Got something tonight.
Yep.
It was kind of fun. I have good memories of it. I enjoyed it. Enjoyed the area. So, but that's where it all started as far as the dating coaching goes. And I know I took his second workshop, went to San Francisco for that, and then I got hired to be a dating coach for them. And ended up traveling around with you a lot. I remember we went to London together. Did you go with me to London, or was that just Neil's? You weren't there.
No, I went to Australia when you went to London, I think.
We went to Seattle.
Yeah, I went to Seattle. We went to Vancouver, I think, or yep. Phoenix. Maybe Florida. Yeah, I went to Miami, I think, too. And
no, I didn't go to Miami with you. I think you went with somebody else, because I didn't go to Miami until a few years ago.
Well, when we started working together doing Inner Confidence, we went to Amsterdam.
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amsterdam, New York. It was a lot of fun. And then I remember we were working for Pickup 101, and I bought the URL Inner Confidence, actually, and then came to you and sat at the Well in Hollywood and said, we need to start Inner Confidence. And, because the thing we were both seeing was all these guys were coming in. We were teaching them a bunch of techniques, but what I was saying is they have inner issues that aren't getting resolved. We need to work on these inner issues. And that's where Inner Confidence was born. We wanted to work on the inner issues.
Yeah.
And so, I remember sitting down, and we were at that first workshop, figuring it all out, and we were putting it on in right here in Marina Del Rey.
Yeah. You remember Matt Artisan?
Oh yeah. I just talked to him tonight, actually.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I interviewed him a few days ago. He was commenting on like how groundbreaking our video sessions were back in the day. Mm. I think we're the first ones to do, you know, the sort of video feedback. We should have patented that shit or something, because everyone ripped it off, you know, they're doing their own versions of it. But I still don't think they did the in-depth stuff that we would do with guys. It was, you know, it was like actual tangible inner game training, whereas everything prior to that was all kind of woo-woo and out there, and this was like, here it is on camera.
Me and you both had training from Carl, a teacher of ours, that really gave us insights into those videos that I just don't think anybody else had.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, that's something that you just, it was years of brutal. We were getting the shit beat out of us.
Oh my God.
I mean, every insecurity in the book was being shown on the screen, and we were forced to look at everyone for hours on end. Yeah. And it has a way of changing you.
Amazing training. Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of when – so we did the work with Carl. Continue on the story because it's nostalgic for me anyways.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff. And, and then I did the work with Carl, and we built inner confidence. And we were just – me and you were getting along, but we were just going in different directions. So you bought inner confidence, or I sold inner confidence, however. And we just kind of – and I kind of was figuring out, do I want to stay in personal growth or not? And then I continued on, and I really wanted to go deep into the inner game stuff. And and so from that point on, I just kept studying and I kept trying new things and I kept practicing. And I wanted to do a different model than all the other dating companies. All the other dating companies would put on a weekend workshop and they travel to the next city, put on another one, put on another one, put on another one. My thought process at the time was, I want to go deep. I want to stay right here in Los Angeles, and I want to put on workshops where clients go deeper and deeper and deeper. And we work together for over like a year, really working on their inner garbage. And it worked. I mean, people really loved the work, and that's where I really got a lot of my deeper inner insights, was many years of just going deeper with everybody and learning more and figuring out more. And that really had a big impact on realizations, and then taking more training, guys like David Nagel, and had a huge impact. And then I just kept getting more and more teachers teaching me more stuff. And then there was this moment, and I remember talking to you about it, when I reached my pinnacle of sickness, where I had blood in my throat, and at one point before, a little while before that, even had blood in my urine. I was barely functioning.
Fuck.
It was very scary. Yeah. I was barely functioning without tons of coffee and energy drinks. I couldn't stay awake. I was foggy headed. I couldn't focus anymore. And I was trying to run my business, and I realized, and I was talking to this guy, David Nagel, who I paid a lot of money for coaching for. He's extremely expensive. And it was my last session with him. And I was telling him what was going on, and I just said, I'm tired. And he said, well, you got to straighten that out. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, if you don't take care of your health first and get that straight, every time you start to grow and succeed, you're going to get sick again and take yourself out. And he says, because your body can't handle the added stress. Your body won't be able to handle it. And because I'd grown to the most I'd ever made in a month. And then all I wanted to do was walk away from it all because I was so tired. And I realized he was right. And I was freaking out inside because I just had all this. First I was going through all these detoxes. I started detoxing right away. And from the detox, I was having shakes. I was having night terrors. And I remember at one point I called you and we were talking about it, where I was at. And that became the greatest gift, like everybody talks about. I took about a year to rebuild everything internally, and I just cleaned up my health for that whole year and worked really hard to get off all the stimulants and all the – and started just focusing on cleaning up my body and my gut. And at the end of that year, it was really amazing because I was meditating sometimes up to 8 hours a day, and then 5 hours, 8 hours. It was crazy, and I was doing a lot of what's called releasing work and meditative-type releasing work. And I had other coaches that were helping me with it. And when I got to the end of that year, it was like my whole life put itself back together. Everything became synchronistic and just started working. And I didn't have to push anymore. And everything started working better and better and better. And it was like all these techniques, because I learned all these techniques to heal myself over that year. And maybe it was a little more than a year, and I started putting them back into the business. And so the business became more than about dating. It became much more deeper. And I started teaching all these deep techniques. Then we started adding workshops that just had to do with the meditative side, just had to do with the feeling side, had to do with the deep. And everything's been growing ever since. And the company is, I always say, you know it's good when it's kind of outgrowing you. Mm-hmm. And it's almost, I could step away now and it would just keep going. Yeah, I'm the figurehead, but there are, I've got other coaches here. This team's become dynamic. I'm seeing people's lives change everywhere. And we, like you said, we're doing a lot of work with a lot of clients. They come in for dating a lot, but the next thing you know, we're helping them start a business, or we're helping them get over a health problem, or we're helping them work on X, Y, and Z, and because that's where the business is really focused. That's the next direction of the business. And it's been with the releasing meditative work and the embodiment work, that's, it's changing everything.
Yeah, that's well, congrats on the business success. And
thank you.
It's interesting. I don't know if you talked to Jesse at the party at all,
yeah.
But he's had a similar experience to kind of what you described. You know, he got sick, and he for the last year he's basically been doing nothing but trying to, you know, dig up his inner shit. And for the longest time, he couldn't fly in an airplane without heavily, you know, sedating himself. He couldn't ride in an elevator, and now he's good. He just took a flight. He was completely sober. He can ride elevators. So all the meditation and internal work he's been doing to get over his, you know, his inner garbage is really paying off. So that reminded me a little bit of the story you told.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I felt I could understand Jesse more than I'd ever understood him before. I mean, I could relate to him better. That's a better way to put it. Because I know we used to rub each other wrong a little bit. I liked him, but we did rub each other wrong here and there.
Sure.
And this time I kind of thought he was funny. I really liked hanging out with him. And so I was really glad to see that change.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was good to reconnect. And in that environment was always hard to have a bad time anyways.
Yeah, when you're in Greece on a beautiful beach and, you know, he's bus sailboats everywhere and beautiful women, it's hard to complain.
Yeah, exactly, so. Right?
Yeah.
So you've also, you know, another reason why I'm excited to have you on the show, you've really kind of adopted not just the, you know, build a business and succeed, but being able to have an awesome lifestyle as well. You travel all the time.
Yep.
You know, you spend a lot of time in Eastern Europe, just like me, and you kind of have that ability to be the digital nomad. But a lot of these digital nomads I see, they kind of have this fantasy of, yeah, I'm going to sit on a beach in Thailand with my laptop, and I'm going to have this structured day where I wake up and I do yoga, and then I'm on the beach and I'm doing my digital shit, and then I go and drink a green juice, and then I do another yoga and meditation class in the afternoon, and then I fuck a hot yoga girl and, you know, have one, you know, wheat-free beer and go to sleep or whatever. But yeah, that's kind of like the idea of the digital nomad lifestyle. But most of the digital nomads I know are either broke and, you know, living in a hostel in Thailand and trying to survive. Yeah. Trying to survive on a few bucks, or, you know, cleaning bathrooms or something at the hostel. But the more successful guys I know, like you, you know, you guys, you have a business, but you're not completely tied to that business. You have your lifestyle and your freedom, and you can work from anywhere around the world. So when did you start, you know, really traveling a lot? And I know you're kind of like your other hub is in Bucharest, right?
Yeah, Bucharest. And we're starting to build we're doing workshops all over the place, but I guess you could say our other hub's Bucharest. Doing more and more in New York, starting to do stuff in Miami more. I think it started, that's a good question. It started when we started going to, because we were doing little things here and there. We were still mostly doing events in LA, and I would travel here and there a little bit. And then Zan Perignon came out, and I was hanging out at my house and said, hey, come to Bucharest. It's the best city in the world, blah, blah, blah. And started telling me why he loves it more than any other city he's ever been to. And I've been traveling my whole life. And I said, okay. So I just bought a ticket for Bucharest. You know, we'd been traveling mostly for fun. We'd go into Vegas, and we'd just gone to Vegas and we're doing stuff. We're coming here and just little places. And so I immediately flew to Bucharest in December, which is the worst time to fly there. A lot of snow. Yeah. And he's like, why are you coming in December? And I'm like, why not? I want to come now. I want to come. I'm going to come over for New Year's and just have a good time. Ended up having a fucking blast. Hung out with Zan, you know, and he's always got these parties going on with all these beautiful women. I went there first time. I fell in love with this Chilean girl in Bucharest. I just had a great time. I was running all over the city and it just quickly became my second home. And I can't say how many times I've been back since. We've been doing events there and workshops there ever since. And so we go to Bucharest and, you know, we'll travel out around from Bucharest and we go to an event. And then now, you know, now we're doing stuff in New York, we're doing stuff in Miami. We were doing stuff in Washington, D.C. at that time. That's right. It was Washington, D.C., Vegas, and L.A. And then we switched over to Bucharest, and now we're doing New York, Miami. And then we're just always traveling, too. But, yeah, and it's a balance. You got to – if you don't choose the balance early – and I think you saw this, too. I see a lot of people that get in this really strong work mode. And they got, and in the future, I'll have a life, but I'm going to work my ass off now. And I agree with that to some degree, but what happens is they get addicted to this idea that I got to do a little more first, and they never actually create the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And one of my mentors, I had studied Mark Allen, he created the lifestyle right away. He had no money. He had to borrow money to buy a latte. He was 30 years old, just got out of some monastery. He was meditating as a monk somewhere and decided to start his first business. And he said he made a commitment to himself. That he was promised himself he was never going to work more than 30 hours a week, even while building the business. And he stuck to that. And now he's a multimillionaire with all these businesses. He published Eckhart Tolle. And I just think I call him my mentor, but I've only met him once or twice. I studied his books, some of his books, Inside Out. So I should be careful how I say that stuff. To me, he felt like a mentor, you know, because he had such a strong influence. Because I listened to some audios by him and books by him over and over, and really embodied them. And he said it's more about the focus and the energy, and you gotta kind of choose it and set it up. And you don't have to be this A-type personality. And I didn't want to be the A-type personality. My body just got sicker when I was younger, when I was an A-type personality. So I didn't want to be it. So, yeah, so I just kind of created it. And so as we got bigger, it just expanded. You know, I, even when I didn't have a lot of money, there was still this idea that I should have enough free time to have a quality of life. I should be enjoying life. I should be going to the beach and at least sitting on the beach. I should be reading good books. I should be. And so, so now, you know, as we've expanded and everything's more successful, regular trips to Japan to snowboard in the winter, going to Chile to snowboard and ski next month, going to, you know, got trips to New York planned. I've just been to New York, going back to New York soon, going over to Miami to do some stuff, and then back to Bucharest, and just got back from Greece hanging out with you, and still working. Like, okay, I got to work next week. I'm going to go take care of that and then go to the next thing. And if you don't plan something, even if it's just little, like little rest periods, sitting on the beach, and what do you love to do, even if you have no money, you're not going to probably create it later.
Yeah.
It'll just become part of who you are.
And, yeah, you totally see that, especially in New York City, for example. You see these guys, they're just like, all right, I'm going to – I mean, my boss said it to me before I got into this world.
I remember that guy.
Yeah, Sal. Yeah. Sal from Long Island. He said – Kramer, give me 5 years and I'll give you the rest of your life. You know, basically, you know, my job was show up at 9 and leave at never. His words, not mine. And I gave him two and a half years.
I had a film boss like that. Yeah, horrible.
Yeah. I ended up broke after those 2.5 years just because it was a disaster. But
I think I gave you some money for investing, and I don't think I ever saw that again.
Yeah, that's gone. That was spent on, you know, someone's trip to fucking Hamptons. Not mine, unfortunately. But it was a classic, you know, boiler room, pump and dump stock scam operation. I had no idea I was working for, you know, straight up mafia after college. And this is the sort of things they'll tell you. You know, the banking world is filled with these people. And this was just before 2008. So I was... all my poker money, I lost all that, and a nice grip of close to $2.5 million from friends and family. Your whatever you invested included in that number.
So, $2.5 million, boy, what you could have done with that.
Oh, jeez. My God, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just glad, like, you know, I wasn't involved in any of the legal aspects of it, and no one sued me or anything like that, so... Lesson
you
learned.
Very, you have very nice friends, I got to tell you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I lost my money too, so they couldn't really blame me. But a few of our other clients lost a decent amount of money too in those investments. So
I think I only lost, what, $1,500, $2,000. I can't remember what it was. It wasn't much.
Yeah. I mean, some people invested large 5-6 figure amounts. So,
wow.
Anyways,
it happens.
It happens.
That's part of learning. I've realized I used to get so upset when I left I invested $5,000, and this was a lot of money to me at the time, right before I partnered with you with this guy to try to start the hypnosis clinic for weight loss and to buy it out. And then I pulled the investment and said, well, I don't want to do it. And I remember that you remember this guy. He went off and stole my money and ran off with my money, and I never saw it again. And I held that grudge for I can't tell you how long. And what I've learned over the years getting more successful is holding on to that grudge and not accepting the failure as just a failure is what kept me from blowing up. It's what kept me from blowing up sooner. Like, there was no point. Every single successful person I've met has lost a bunch of money somewhere along the line, has screwed something up somewhere along the line, and they just get up somewhere else. They go back and they do it again. They get right back on the horse, and they don't sit and live in regrets over this money they lost here and this money they lost there. It's part of the process.
Yeah, it's part of business, you know, and you're going to make mistakes, just like, you know, I try to look at it similar to dating in a sense where, you know, you might have to hit on 10, 20 girls before you find a cool one. Right. And that's if you're good. If you're not, you might have to hit on 100 or 10,000. You might have to, you might still be out there. But I mean, if you look at the, you know, just the ratio of wins to, you know, attempts at the bat. Right, this idea that you should be successful every time is just insane.
It's the whole game in dating and all of life, really, but the whole game in dating, since we mainly teach dating in the beginning at least, is the game is played in rejection. If you're not good at rejection, you'll never be good with women. You know, that's where the whole game is played. And the guys that enjoy, not just handle it well, but enjoy rejection are always going to be the best. Mm-hmm. They're going to stand out, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah, and it's the hardest thing to face. You know, guys would rather join the military and face bullets than rejection. You know, we've seen that with guys we've worked with.
We get these ex-military guys that can't talk to a girl to save their lives. It's where they'd rather shoot her than have sex with her. And I mean, it sucks, but you know, yeah.
So I know you've. You know, you're just like an encyclopedia of information, people you've studied with, people you've mentored with. What else kind of along your journey, another milestone or something big that you realized that kind of had a shift for you after you got sick? So you're starting to feel better. What happened after that?
Well, I realized for me, a lot of my shyness came from gut damage. So I'll say that really quick. For a lot of guys out there that have been working really hard and they got some gut problems, your gut is largely connected to your self-esteem and is largely connected to your confidence, and it's connected to a lot of depression. And so if you don't get that taken care of, you can try to change your subconscious mind all you want. It will change and grow slowly, but it's going to be hard. And what I always recommend when I see somebody with a lot of gut stuff going on, and there's a lot of the gut itself can make you very intelligent and very intuitive because of having to deal with all that pain that's going on down there. But then at a certain point, you need to get that handled. And if you get that handled, your life will change radically. To me, that became the most important thing in my life was really getting that. And it wasn't easy at first. I didn't understand it. I didn't understand what was going on. I did lots of testing. Lots of work. I found out I had all these different conditions and different things going on. And as I cleaned them up one at a time, God damn it, my whole world didn't seem different. It was like the cloud was lifted.
So what would you say to a guy who may not know he has anything going on? Like, for example, I might not know I have anything going on, right? I have, I'm always like a layer shy of a six pack. I don't know if that counts as gut, but like, you know, I'll get to the point where I can see like the top two abs and then I'll be like, yeah, and then that'll kind of go away. But, you know, maybe I could lose 5 pounds or convert 5 pounds of, so would that count as gut problems? And if so, what would I do, for example? Or is this more like a feeling sick sort of thing?
No. The body will hold weight. People will, if people do have some gut damage, that it'll hold a little, that spare tire that kind of sags down low. Mm-hmm. That typically you'll have a hard time getting rid of that. And usually it'd be a little bigger than what you're talking about if you've got serious gut damage. Cause what it's doing is the body stores toxins in the fat. And it doesn't want to let go of the fat because it's protecting you from the toxins. Mm-hmm. And when the toxins are cleaned up and the inflammation's cleaned up, because we have chronic inflammation, we have gut damage, and that's what makes us so tired, is we have chronic inflammation internally and through the body. As that gets cleaned up, then we start to the body becomes more willing to let go of that last little bit. And otherwise it needs it. It's just protecting you. You know, same thing with candida. Like, guys are always, I got candida, or girls are, I had candida too. And then I'd learn from somebody, candida is not the problem. Candida is protecting you from other toxins inside the intestine, and you need to get the other problem solved so the candida can get back under control. And that's exactly what happened to me when I started solving the real problem, starting to eat to heal my gut, change my whole diet mindset, then my body started to really heal itself. And I got leaner and leaner, and I'm still getting leaner. And I've actually gotten, I'm actually taking it another level. Even now, I'm always going farther with it, experimenting with something new. And I'm experimenting with something new to see if I can get even more inflammation out of my body, if there's more, and I'm already seeing more results. And
is this as simple as changing your diet? What are the steps you're taking?
Well, I'll tell you what I did, and I'll tell you the easiest thing I think there is to do. Now looking back, what I did was I did change my diet a lot. I just started. I didn't know what to do, so I ate meat and vegetables, and I drank a little bit of coffee for energy. That's all I had. I had gut damage. I had interstitial cystitis, so I felt like I had a constant bladder infection. I was inflamed. I was sleeping all the time. So I just went down to meat. I realized there was a point where all I could eat was just basically chicken and vegetables and basic vegetables. Did that for a long time, and I got skinny as a rail. I got down to 139, and I looked so sickly, and I didn't know it at the time. What I was missing, I needed fat in my diet because I needed an energy source. I wasn't going to have carbs. I need fat. I've got to have one of the two for an energy source, and I had neither, and that's why I needed so much coffee. I was just fatigued. I was beaten. I was tearing up my adrenals, but it did get a lot of things straightened out. That was a good guess move. Where things really started to help was I went to this doc, Dr. Rachel West. There's other great doctors like her. She's a DO, and she did a whole panel on my body and blood tests, and we did my gut biome, and I was able to check all the bacteria, and she said, you had this going on and that going on, and I found out I had this one really bad gut bacteria that it wasn't affecting me like it does some people, but it kills some people, and that was probably part of the problem. I was prone to, I probably had ulcerations going on in my gut. I had some other bacterias. I had two forms of non-contagious strep. I had all these things she found, and I was like, Jesus Christ, that's overwhelming. So I start working on that. And so I keep cleaning up the diet more and more. And what I found, because my gut was so torn up, that I had to go more ketogenic, more of a fat-based meat, and vegetables kind of diet for a long time. And that helped a lot. And then what ended up happening was fascinating, was I still wasn't working. Well, everything wasn't right. And so I went and complained some more, and I said, this is what's going on. Let's take a deeper look at this. And then she said, it sounds like you have something called SIBO. I said, what's that? And so I looked it up online. It's called small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. And apparently it's when the large intestine invades the small intestine and starts taking all the bacteria from the large intestine. So a lot of the foods you would digest in the small intestine can't get digested, and they ferment in your small intestine. You just feel like shit, and you get all this inflammation. So I immediately, being that I was just so determined to get this solved before I even got the test results back, because I did a test on it, I just started eating the SIBO diet. And when I ate the SIBO diet, within 3 days, I was like a different goddamn human being. And a lot of what I was eating in the SIBO diet that I wasn't supposed to eat were vegetables. There was a lot of vegetables that on SIBO, your body.
What's the difference between SIBO and keto?
Well, SIBO is you can do keto and keto together really well, but keto will say eat all these vegetables, right? And in SIBO, there's a lot of vegetables that are that the small intestine can't digest. I'll give you an example. Would be broccoli, onion, garlic, all this stuff that's in so much food. So even though I was keto, I was still eating. I was eating these huge salads every day, and I was getting all these fucking. I was there's a whole list of vegetables I was getting that would irritate SIBO. So I immediately cut out all those vegetables and just went down to a basic few vegetables. And God, within 4 days, I felt like a different human being. So I knew I had SIBO. Then the test results came back positive.
And what is it? SIBO? How do you spell that?
S-I-B-O.
SIBO. And
small,
gotcha. Yeah.
Small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. And so then after I switched, I felt so much better. My energy went up. I started losing weight. I still didn't feel perfect, but I felt a lot better. So then I got this crazy idea. I've been watching these videos recently of a guy who was doing the carnivore diet, and I've been seeing this over and over, and I just thought, God, this is a crazy diet. I'd never do this diet. But then I started seeing all these people healing of everything under the sun from the carnivore diet, which is just basically meat and water. They're living on a lot of red meat, water, some other meats too, and they get a lot of the fattiest cuts, so they're getting plenty of fat. And then some of them
No vegetables.
It's meat. Some people add cheese, healthy cheese. Some people add some dairy, butter. So I did a version. I did kind of a ketogenic version of this diet just to try it out because I keep – all these people were healing. And I'm like, what is this thing about? And I started – I've just started it recently actually. And I now, again, I feel better than I ever felt before. It's like, oh my God, I feel better. And what I realized, I still had some inflammation in my body. And what happens with this diet is you go down to just basic food, such basic food. Like I know I can handle red meat. My body takes it really well. I know I can handle these specific foods. And what happens is I took out everything that could inflame the body, everything that from a gut damaged gut lining. And so all the inflammation goes away and your body starts healing. And so I figure I don't have to stay on it forever, but let's say I stay on it for a month, 2 months, because I'm hearing all these people in month, 2 months, 3 months of being on it, their whole lives change.
That's funny. So they're just eating just meat and meat and meat, right?
Yeah, different cuts of steak and different cuts of fatty steak. And
I mean, I love steak. I fart a lot when I eat red meat, but I don't know if that's good or bad. I mean, I feel fine. I'm just ripping farts all night.
Well, check out. Yeah. Check out, there's two interviews I recommend if you really want to find out about it before anybody starts it, and you really want to understand it, because I'm still learning about it as I'm doing it. But I tell you right now, my God, I my body heat's gone up. I'm fucking getting hornier than I've ever been. my ability to think all day is super clear. I'm getting shit done. Like today I was like tearing through shit and I'm like, yeah, let's do the next thing. I always used to want to work out, but I was always too tired. Now I'm like, let's go work out. Mm-hmm. So it's really making a big change. And so people on carnivore are starting to theorize that humans are actually carnivores. Now, vegans will freak out over this, but I'm getting a good response to it. that humans are designed to eat red meat, primarily beef, things like that, you know, game meat. And that's what we thrive the best on. Now, what I've noticed in the short period of time I've been on this, that I haven't lost – my taste for steak has increased, not decreased. It's like I think I would get boring after so many days. I'm actually wanting it more. Whenever I get a little hungry, a little steak right now would be good. Give me some good energy.
Switch up the cuts. I got a little tri-tip going and maybe a porterhouse the next day. Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely like the fattier cuts, but yeah.
Ribeye, maybe.
Ribeye, yes, definitely ribeyes. Those are amazing. Prime rib too. I love some of my prime rib. I had a bunch of bacon today with.
It's making me hungry. I haven't eaten yet today. Fuck.
it's in the morning
here in Ukraine, so that's why. But do you combine that with intermittent fasting at all?
Yes. Yeah, I love my intermittent fasting. I don't like eating in the morning anymore. I gave it up a while ago and found, because I like autophagy, which is where the body heals itself of do you know what autophagy is?
No. How do you spell that?
Okay. I think it's let's double check. A-U-T-O-P-H, I think. Let's find out.
Sounds right. Autophagy.
You find it?
Nope.
A-U-T-O. Oh, I just saw it. A-U-T-O-P-H-A-G-Y.
Autophagy, yeah. Auto and then phagy.
Mm-hmm.
P-H-A-G-Y.
So when you fast for like 16 hours, or more, your body goes into autophagy, which is where it goes through and starts looking for damaged cells to destroy and rebuild, basically get rid of these all these damaged cells. Because we eat all day, we never enter autophagy, and they're finding that humans should actually be entering autophagy every on a regular basis. I don't know about every day, but on a regular basis. I'm not an expert on any of this stuff, but that's part of how we clean up all our old cells and get rid of old damaged cells. And so a lot of people really like intermittent fasting because and then you think about it, if we were primitive, we probably wouldn't be getting up in the morning and eating first thing.
No way. We'd be hunting, and we might go 2 or 3 days without a kill, and then we'd have a big feast of red meat and, you know, there on you to the go. Next.
Tons of fat.
Yeah.
Scour that fat, you know?
Yep.
And the autophagy, what it does is when this is how I see it. Now, double check this with YouTube videos or go look for some good science, but the way I understand it, is the autophagy goes in, and when our body's energy is not being used for digestion, it's being used to go find damaged cells and get rid of them and replace them. And then when we go to digestion, it stops because all the energy then goes into digestion. So so I like the idea of intermittent fasting for the purpose of autophagy. Dr. Berg, he has a good YouTube channel. He talks really good information about autophagy. And the other thing I was going to tell you, the carnivore diet, for anybody that's interested in it and wants to learn more about it, doesn't think it's totally crazy, check out Jordan Peterson, who doesn't speak on carnivore diet normally. He speaks on all kinds of other stuff, but he did an interview on Joe Rogan where the 30 minutes of his interview, he talks about how his and his daughter's life completely changed from having this carnivore diet. His daughter was dying, basically. And she had such bad arthritis by 15. She already had an ankle replaced and a few other things. She had massive autoimmune disorders. And by going fully carnivore, she's pretty much completely healed, other than, of course, the replacements. And then he started doing it because he had so many autoimmune disorders and different things going on and how it sealed up his whole body. And that's what got me interested. So then I will listen to this Joe Rogan podcast with Sean Baker, Dr. Baker. And Dr. Baker's all about carnivore. He's a big promoter of it right now. And so they did an hour and some minute interview with talking all about carnivore. So that was the next one I listened to. And that's when I was like, after those two, I was ready to try it.
I'm ready to try it after you said the word carnivore diet. Because
there you go. Let's just pick
all you had
that
to tell
meat.
Me was, you know, steak and fat. That's my favorite meal or my favorite, you know.
You throw a little butter in there and a little, it's funny because the first few days I did get, I was like, I don't want any more steak. But then 4 days in, all I wanted was steak. I was like, okay, now my body really wants steak.
Did I tell you I tried to go vegan? I lasted like 3 days.
That's about how long I did vegetarian for 5.5 years. Vegan, I couldn't get past 3 days. Yeah.
It was
And vegetarian for 5.5 years, and I was in worse health, way worse health than when I started.
I couldn't figure out what to eat because you can't even have cheese. So I'd go to like the local taco shop and I'd get a bean and cheese burrito without the cheese, and I'd just be eating like refried disgusting beans in a nasty tortilla. I'm like, this doesn't seem healthy.
No.
I'm sure there's vegans listening and be like, that's not the right way to do vegan. I know, but I'm fucking lazy and I'm not going to like. Yeah, it's just not for me. Vegans. Sorry, vegans.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen these vegans that look amazing. They look healthy. They drink their green juices. They have their almond butter. They have their whatever else. And I'm not doing it because most of that stuff, because my gut lining is damaged, would just irritate the hell out of it.
Yeah.
And I did vegetarian for 5.5 years. I ended up in a really bad place. I can't eat a lot of vegetables even because of the SIBO. That's going away, though. The SIBO will probably be gone within 6 months. But
my reason for doing it is because I saw some of those documentaries about them killing animals, and I'm such an animal lover. I'm like, I can't keep killing Bessie the cow. And
well, did you hear? There's a Ted Nugent interview with Joe Rogan. I'm a Joe Rogan fan. Ooh, yeah.
Oh, he's great.
But there's a Ted Nugent. Yeah, he is good. Yeah. There's a Ted Nugent interview with him. I didn't hear it yet, but my buddy told me about it, and I saw a clip of it. I've been meaning to watch it, where Ted Nugent says to create all the fields where they grow soy, they have to kill tons of animals. And they said just by eating. You're killing all these animals.
I'm going with that. You fucking vegans are killing more animals than us.
Who knows?
There's always hilarious counterpoints like that. I love it.
But if I'm going to heal, you know, I got to heal my body, and I got to be functional. And honestly, you know, plants they've already proven that plants emit almost like a high pitched scream that we can't hear with the human ears when you cut them. They're feeling it, just like animals do.
Yeah.
And they actually grow roots, and they tie their roots together under the surface, under the ground, and they actually communicate through the roofs, through the roots. So the plants and trees do have a consciousness, and they do have an intelligence. And you are still killing them when you eat them. You can't get around it. You're killing stuff every day.
I walked through a sunflower field a couple days ago, and those sunflowers...
How could you? Oh, my God. No.
Well, they're over 6 feet tall. And I walked, you know, 5 feet in, and you're just surrounded by sunflowers. And the face of the sunflowers is as big as your face. I felt like I was like surrounded by zombies or something. It was kind of creepy because I could feel the energy of the sunflowers. And my mom wanted me to cut one for her. I'm like, I'm not chopping the head off of a sunflower. No way.
You made a very good point. When it's about this big, a few inches tall or just on the ground, it's no big deal to cut it. But when it starts to get to the size of us where we can relate to it, suddenly we feel guilty.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's right where you're at. You could feel the life force coming off it, and I'm killing a life force.
Yeah.
And that's – you can't get away from it. If you want to avoid that, just stop eating and die. That's the only way you're going to avoid it. I mean, really.
Yeah.
So
fuck you all, you vegans. Just kidding. Whatever. Unsubscribe if you want. No.
I have some vegan friends. They're cool. I don't have a problem.
No, they're great. They're great. Yeah. Yeah. I just like the all the back and forth stuff, all the nonsense, like the hardcore people, on the left and the right. It's just interesting to me. But anyways, back to the you getting healthy. That's awesome, because I remember when we lived together, you struggled with it. You were tired all the time and sick, and it was brutal. I remember how brutal it was for you. So it must feel amazing.
There's a term for it. I don't know the term, but I felt guilty for being sick all the time, and I always felt like everybody thought I was faking because it was so chronic and had been in my life the whole time. So I always just wanted to kind of hide and felt guilty when I wasn't feeling good. And then when I felt good, I'd want to run out and try to make up for all the time I didn't do stuff. And then I'd crash again from pushing myself, and then I'd want to hide again.
It's shitty. I have another buddy who is dealing with some major like sleep stuff, where he just has to sleep all the time, and he gets grilled for it by his friends and coworkers, and they're like, "Oh, you lazy asshole," and blah blah blah. And it's like, he's not a lazy guy. He's a really smart guy. He's a really driven guy. But he's just, something is causing him to need like insane amounts of sleep, and it's not laziness. So it sucks when you're dealing with a health problem like that, where people can just be like, "Oh, I mean, I probably did it to you. I owe you an apology." So you're like, "Brian, get to work, you fucking lazy asshole. Get out of bed," right?
But yeah, I think I felt guilty more than you picked on me, but I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, I at my peak, you didn't even know me at my peak. When I was at my worst, I was probably sleeping sometimes 12, 14 hours in a day, and I was inflamed all the time. I didn't even know what inflammation was. I was too young to understand any of this stuff. I go to my doctor, and he would just say, because he was a standard Western medical doctor, which I don't go to those types anymore. He'd just say, "Well, I don't know, it's just the way you are." Uh-huh. And I remember I went to him with this bladder infection. And I had this chronic, really bad bladder infection. He's like, "You don't have a bladder infection. We just tested." And they said, Test me again. "You don't have a bladder infection." And so he's like, "There's nothing wrong with you." And he was looking at me like I was crazy, and I'm like, "My bladder hurts." And so they had to do this horrible catheter thing to me where they pumped all this chemical. It was really – this was many, many years ago. I was really young. And they found nothing wrong then. And then – except there was a little off in my bladder or something. And so then I gave up because I didn't want any more pain. They were just making me worse. And then I found out I had something called interstitial cystitis, which was my own immune system was attacking my own bladder lining and causing it to inflame all the time, making it feel like I had a bladder infection, but there was really no infection. And so that's gone away, and all this stuff just keeps going and going away, because and I tell you, man, I am so excited to build the businesses now. I'm so excited to go out and make money. I'm so excited. And the happier you get, the more successful you become. Mm-hmm. And that's the key to success, is being happy. And I learned that when I was in my year of meditation, that if you're not happy, if this is what kind of David Nagel started me on when he quoted me, told me to do this, like straighten up your health. And I realized that when I was doing that year of releasing, which I teach a lot of releasing now, a lot of releasing programs, was that if I get up in the morning and I'm rushing, pissed off, angry, not happy, all I'm going to do is fuck up all my work anyways. So straighten that out first. I don't care if it takes an hour. Straighten that out before you put your hands on a new product, on creating something. Because if you don't, you're going to put all that energy into what you're creating. Your energy transfers, and it transfers to women when you're talking to them. If you're turned on, they get turned on. If you're happy, they feel your happiness. If you're angry, they feel your anger. If they're sad and depressed, they feel your depression. And if you put that into your work, it's going to show. And that's why you're struggling. You can use the best techniques in the world. You're pumping all kinds of, I have to get this done. I need to make this happen. I'm struggling. It's so bad. I'm pissed off. I could have the best systems in the world for making money. They won't work.
Yep.
And same
with pickup, right? You see these guys who learn all the fucking things, the techniques, and whatever. They're dressed up inside. And they hate themselves. They hate women and they're angry and they put out zero love. And they just get fucking shot down and destroyed all day. Whereas the guy who's, you know, who likes himself or is at least feeling good about himself in that moment, he can say anything. One of the guys on a recent trip used this line as one of the most craziest things I've ever heard. He's like, you know, let's have sex and let's pretend like we're deeply in love, as like a, basically like an opening line. And then they did it.
Love it. I can see some girls liking that. They're craving some love right now. Yeah.
Like, let's go have sex, but let's pretend we're like totally in love. And it's like, you know, we've been together for like, you know, like a month, and it's that time where you're going to say, I love you. Let's have sex and just do that. Okay. Yeah. And then they do it and they're in love. So,
well, you could have said it sincerely. You could have said it jokingly and seem sincere later. I mean, it's all in the energy. Yeah. He's having fun with it, right?
Totally.
He was having fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point. What I figured out, and because some people will challenge me on this and they'll say, no, but I've succeeded and I'm depressed or I'm not happy. And I'm like, but not when you're succeeding. You're taking Ritalin, you're taking Adderall, you're taking a Rockstar energy drink like I used to do. You're getting pumped, state pumped way up. You're feeling that buzz. You get a bunch of work done for 2 hours, then you crash.
Mm-hmm.
And work is getting done while you're high on the drug, which is eventually going to take you out. While you're high on the state pump, where you're high on the whatever is giving you the rush, which can only last so long if it's state pumping above a bunch of misery and feeling like, that's when I realized I had to really clean up how I felt inside at a deep level. I couldn't keep taking all the energy drinks and everything to get stuff done. Because after we separated, that's what I was using, energy drinks and stuff like that, and tons of it just to get up and get work done. And then I would crash and I'd have to go get another one to get work done. And if I worked on it without the buzz, without the big high, which I swear that stuff's like cocaine, man. I was drinking Rockstars and it's like the worst thing. Get a couple of those a day. And I've tried to limit myself how many I drank, but if I tried to work without that, nothing would work right. And it's
so unhealthy. I can feel like my heart stopping when I pound a Red Bull. Like I can actually feel like something going on in there, stopping. My heart stopping is probably the wrong way to describe it, but it doesn't feel good.
not at all.
So another thing I wanted to ask you about, this was probably around that time when you started feeling better. But I noticed you, and you have a really big following on YouTube. You've got like, what, 50,000 subscribers or something, right?
Yeah, it's 48,300 right now, or somewhere in that range. It's been growing.
And it's a great channel. Yeah, it's The Fearless Man, or what's the channel called?
Yeah, The Fearless Man.
Fearless Man.
We focus largely on dating on the channel for those guys, but inner game dating, this whole idea that you don't have to trick a woman into bed, you know, this idea that you can just learn to be a fucking solid man and women will like you and want to be with you and they get it and, you know, and so that type of stuff.
And obviously to build that sort of following, you need consistency. You need to be posting a lot of videos. So is that like once you started feeling better, is that when you really started consistently putting out content and growing your business that way?
Yeah, that was huge. I'll tell you, when I first started, it's interesting. I like this interview because I'm talking about a lot of stuff I don't normally talk about on these videos. But when I first started out, I put up my first few videos and they were terrible. I was scared shitless to have people comment. And I knew I needed to do it because of the fear. And I was like, if I'm going to build, truly become more fearless, and I want to become more fearless in every part of my life, then I need to put these out and I need to keep putting them out. So I just started putting out 3-minute clips and 4-minute clips. I didn't care what they looked like. I didn't care how bad they were. I didn't care how terrible they were. We just edited them down, shot them up. As I started to relax, I started working on better quality and I started working on better presence and what can I add. And it just grew. And the key was the consistency. Mm-hmm. They were going up at least one a week, and I think lately it's been at least 2 or 3 a week, and they just keep going up, and we don't stop. We're always shooting more content. We got more content in the pipeline, and now I don't care. People come on there and say the dumbest shit, dude, and there's always these trolls that are going to say, and some of it's funny. I mean, that was funny, whatever.
Right.
And it makes me laugh.
The comments people leave.
But, Yeah. And there's always somebody trying to get your goat. And that's part of what makes me laugh. I don't really care what they say because the bulk of the people love it. And the bulk of the people, I hear all these every day, these people changing their lives just from the channel that I've never met, talking about things. I got a girlfriend, I got a wife, I got a new job, and because of this advice, your advice goes so much deeper than everybody else's. And because I do a lot of really deep stuff on the channel and subtle stuff, very subtle stuff. And that's what makes it matter for me. And I have this image in my head. It's a image of my friend way many years ago. We were really young and he got on this forum and I've always held this image, and he goes, you know what I do at work when I'm bored? And I go, what? And he goes on the forum and he finds a forum for like animal lovers. And he goes in there and he goes, watch this. He goes, excuse me, I got a question. And everybody goes, yeah. He goes, what's the best way to beat your dog? Or something like that. People start yelling at him and they're getting upset. He's like, oh, really? And then he says, and he's sitting there on the other side as they're getting upset and writing one comment after another to him. And he's laughing his ass off. He's, and he goes, watch this, I'm going to piss him off more. And he writes something else. Now, I know this guy personally. He would be the first one to stop somebody from beating a dog. But he loves to go into a forum and push their buttons. So I just, whenever I get somebody to
speak. I'm looking at Wiley over here. I'll be like, Wiley.
Hey, Wiley. You look good, buddy. The world traveling dog. But yeah, he's actually the first guy he would never hit a dog or anything, but he just loved to piss people off.
Oh, so when I see people get so fucking crazy, they have nothing to do. A lot of these people who, I mean, I don't know them, right? I don't know who these people are, but I can only imagine there's these fat losers sitting in their underwear, right? And doing nothing but, you know, spamming, you know, trolling different YouTube videos and be like, fuck you, you suck. You know, like this is who I picture. But I mean, for anyone to be engaging in that behavior, has to be in a lot of pain.
This guy, here's the funny thing is this guy wasn't even mad. He was just bored. Yeah. He was bored at work. He had an office job. He was stuck there all day, hated his job, and had nothing else to do. So he'd get on these sites to make himself laugh. And he'd write shit to see if he could get – it was passive aggression.
I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the people commenting. But that's great. I love what he –
Yeah, there are. You're right. A lot of them are just angry, angry people. And so I just ignore them. It's not a big deal to me. I don't even want to engage them because it's a conversation that's not worth my time. Now, if somebody's got a real constructive criticism, I'll engage that. But if they're just attacking for no reason, I have no interest.
Yeah.
If they got a real, hey, why did you do this? I don't think this is right. That's a good conversation. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, that's you know? That's good back and forth dialogue. Yeah. So when did you was it difficult to kind of get on that consistency? I mean, that's something I've struggled with a little bit, certainly with this podcast. I mean, this is almost episode 90, but I've gone through stretches where – and it's all about consistency with anything in life, you know, building a business, dating, right? If you want to see those consistent returns, you need the consistent effort, which I've had to learn the long and hard way. But what do you have any – what do you do to keep yourself in that mode where you're always posting videos, even though you're traveling and moving around? That can make it tough as well.
There were several things I did. First off, I learned a lot about the principle of consistency because I didn't totally understand the power of it. And I think one of the best books on the topic is a book called The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. And it is a phenomenal read for anybody that wants to understand what consistency really does. Because consistency doesn't just blow up your business. It's literally compounding interest is what consistency is, just like a bank account. And it shoots up eventually and you get that point. But also, as he pointed out in that book, that most people are compounding in the reverse direction. They're compounding into a eventual downward slide that's going to take them out. Like they get old and suddenly they're fat and they can't, and then their whole life sucks. And every day they're doing that thing that's taking them just that much more downward, till eventually it's just a big crash.
Wow.
And he says, so you gotta really ask yourself where you're doing that in your life, and then definitely stop that. So that book is a really good read. It really illustrates all these points, and it's on a lot of different angles, so you really see it. That was huge. The other piece was, because of my gut issues, I wasn't consistent, and I knew this. And I knew that I would have weeks when I was up and ready to go and weeks when I was down. So in the weeks where I was up, I had to get a lot of stuff in the can for like the channel, a lot of stuff pre-recorded, so that when the weeks when I was down – that stuff was it. It was already ready to go up. And then I had to have a good team of people around me, because I have a great team of people, and I had to make sure there were members that were consistent to compensate for my inconsistency at the time. Now, as I've been getting healed, I'm becoming more and more consistent all the time now. But back then I had to plan my consistency through my ups and downs.
Gotcha.
And I started getting really strict about stuff. Mondays after workshops are recovery time. And I know I'm going to get inflammation, so I'm going to have X, Y, and Z around to reduce the inflammation over the weekends when I'm teaching a lot. And I'm going to have it on Monday and maybe even Tuesday for part of the day or Tuesday. And I had to kind of plan all this out and try to always have a backlog of material if I don't recover in time to get to the next piece or something like that. And so it just became about having – and if I'm failing at my own consistency, having people around that will keep me consistent or keep the material going until I can get it going again. And that's – so it was really, in a sense, I was consistently self-compensating for my inconsistencies
right.
until I get unconsistent. And that was a huge piece.
Yeah, that's really important. And it sounds like you had the right amount of accountability from your team members. But, you know, maybe not too much where you're pushing yourself too hard and you're yeah. really predicting your own behavior, which is really important. And I love what you said about the compounding of consistency, because I've certainly noticed, you know, from my own experience where you can push it, right? And you can try to do everything in a week, right? And then you're just going to crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about what's the long game? Go fast to go slow to go fast.
Right.
Something also that I heard from Jeff Olson for the first time, and it's super true. You know, go slow to go fast. It's the long game. Look at the Beatles. Beatles are a great example. They became an overnight success in a sense. You know, you see them just blew up overnight, and they were all over TV, right? But they spent years in dingy little bars playing multiple sets a night. I think 6 nights a week, just training.
That whole myth of the overnight success. It's never an overnight success. It's
no.
Yeah.
It might be an overnight financial gain or overnight celebrity status, but there was all this work being done behind the scenes before that. And you see, anybody who does somehow manage to get an overnight success, they tend to go down just as fast.
Yeah.
They don't last.
I think Malcolm Gladwell talks about the Beatles and Outliers. I'm not positive, but I remember reading it somewhere, if it's not that book. And he talks about how they spent – I'm pretty sure it was a 10,000-hour rule, because they spent hours and hours and hours just playing together and finding that sound. And then eventually, yeah, they were an overnight success, but it was, you know, 10,000-plus hours in the making.
Yeah, it's exactly it. Mm-hmm. It was an interesting thing. I had two mentors that contradicted each other. One is David Nagel, and the other was Jeff Olson. I met him a few times. I trained under him in a big organization where I did some work, and so that's how I consider myself kind of mentored by him. But David Nagel, who I did direct coaching with too, he's a cool dude, and he would say, you can blow up overnight. Quantum leaps are real. He says my mentor, who was Bob Proctor, was his mentor, challenged him to go from 60,000 a year to 60,000 a month in 1 month. And he said, I thought he was joking. I didn't think it was possible. Then I started to think it was possible. Then I started to think maybe it is. And he said, it took me 3 months and then I've never looked back. I've never made less. He said, so you can have that quantum leap. And then Jeff Olson would say the opposite. He'd say, there is no quantum leaps. It's all about compounding interest, and you got to work hard and you got to be consistent. It's a little innocuous things that don't matter, and you got to do them every day. And that's what creates all success. And all these people just say quantum leap. And he says, I can't stand it because it's a great way to sell books. And I know David Nagel is not just trying to sell books. He believes it and he lives it. The difference is that they're both right, is what I realized one day. You got this guy. If he compounds the interest just right and he really builds the right roots and the infrastructure and everything, he's going to have a quantum leap.
Yeah.
And it's going to look because everything was in place and built for it. And what I think happens with what David Nagel sees is when somebody is ready for that quantum leap because they've been working hard and working on their internals and working on their beliefs, like Bob Proctor probably saw this in him. He'd been working and taking the seminars and learning, and he said, it's time, and he's saying, it's time for you. Go. Why are you making 60,000 a year? You should be making 60,000 a month. You're ready.
Right.
And he had his quantum leap. He was ready for it because he did all this work beforehand.
Right. And Nagel, then they've taken credit for it. See, I gave you the quantum leap. No, but that's a really good, that's an amazing ability to be able to spot someone who's right at that threshold.
Yeah.
And to be able to help them make that jump. Because maybe without him, they wouldn't have made that leap. Maybe they would have, slowly, gradually built up. But, to be able to take someone who's right at that threshold and to jump them up, to 10x their income in a month, it's not bad.
It's huge. Yeah. I think it's a gift. And Bob Proctor's an amazing man. I took a workshop from him about a month or two ago, and I was just blown away by his ability. The guy's like 80-some years old. He looks so healthy and young, and he's still traveling the world, speaking on stages, going 100 miles. I don't know how he does it, man. He's insane. He lives the teachings. He is not somebody who just talks about him. He is like embodying them.
Yeah.
And you know who he is, right? You've seen Bob?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's on The Secret and a bunch of I think I've seen him on the stage a few times as well.
Yeah. That's one guy I got to hang out with him. I took one of his events, but I want to hang out with him in person at some point and just sit down with him. I'd love to interview the guy. So I'm digging a little deeper myself, but we'll see. It'll happen when it happens.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right. So we haven't spent a lot of time talking about dating on this episode, which is awesome.
I like that too.
I love talking about it, other stuff too, because I talk about dating so much. But you have so much awesome material and insights on dating. Is there anything in particular you can leave our listeners with?
Yeah, the thing that is so important that guys got to realize is you're never going to use logic to seduce a woman. Every guy out there is trying to logically to figure out how to get women turned on, and just stop altogether. The whole key to seduction is emotion. If you can't feel the emotion and transfer it to her, she's never going to feel it. It's all about, can you feel actual, real, God-given or nature-given or body-given curiosity, appreciation, turn-on, sexual turn-on, arouse, all these energies, you have to really feel them while looking in her eyes, while talking to her, and it's got to come through your voice, through your eyes. This is what naturals do that you guys can't see. And then what happens is every guy goes out there and tries to say exactly what the natural said, trying to get the same results, but they don't have the emotions, they don't have the feelings, and they're trying to do it logically, and that's why it never works. And so the moment you start to really feel the passion in your own body, you start to really feel your own cock and balls, you start to really feel your own heart when you talk to women, and you speak from those parts of your body, and you let that fucking logical part of your mind shut down. Use it at work, use it on computers, but you shut it down, that's when the game is going to change. It's going to change a lot. And now there's ways to direct those energies and things like that, more penetrating inner eye contact, and to direct. And what that does is it sends the turn on into the girl, or it sends the compassion into the girl, and she feels it and then she gives it back. And then you create the bubble and all that stuff. But that's all another thing.
I think guys are scared to let out that emotion a lot of the time. I'm sure you do a lot of work with them on that.
Yeah, that's the number one thing we work on, is getting in the beginning.
Yeah, because it's, I mean, I know from my own experience back in the day, like, I was scared to show any emotion. Growing up in my house, like, the only emotion that was normal and encouraged was laughter and, you know, lighthearted joking. So that's kind of how my, you know, easygoing, lighthearted personality came to be. But showing any sort of anger or, you know, intensity was frowned upon. And so, you know, that's how I kind of grew up to be the nice guy that a lot of my clients have struggled with. And most guys who struggle with women are some version of the nice guy. And they're afraid to show that.
Yeah.
That attraction.
If you're a nice guy, you are repressing a lot of emotions that you need to turn on women. And that's the problem.
Yeah.
It's not that you're nice. It's that you're nice to a fault.
Yeah. I wasn't fucking nice. I was, you know.
You were more the class clown.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. When I say I wasn't nice, it wasn't authentic. I was just trying to be nice to get the pussy. But yeah, a class clown. And, you know, I was, but I was afraid of my own emotions. I was afraid to show my emotions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's scary when you first do it. I mean, in my house, no, emotions weren't welcomed at all. My stepdad was sociopathic and my mother was bipolar. So she was screaming at us and so I just learned to be quiet and pull all my emotions inward. And my stepdad didn't feel any emotions. He was ice cold, career criminal. So you just keep it all in here. Don't let anybody see it. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And you do a lot of that stuff at your workshops. A lot of.
Yeah.
I see you pull the emotions out of the guys and,
you know, it's hard at first, man.
Oh, some of the guys, I remember some of the guys we used to work with, they're just like, you're not going to get anything out of that.
I ain't talking. Yeah.
It's talking.
What used to take me months sometimes now I can actually do and sometimes a day, a few days, an hour. It just depends on the guy, but it kind of shocks me how much faster things move now. And I'd love to have you come down and check it out sometime.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I miss doing a lot of that work. You know, I'll do it occasionally with, you know, some clients that I work with long term. But just the amount of partying and the partying trips I've been planning, I've been doing less and less, and it's making me want to get back to it because it really does make a profound change. And
it sounds like you need a balance.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, the party's great. I mean, when I was in Greece, that was phenomenal. So I had a great time. I was only there 2 days out of the, what, five? Was that five or seven? Was that a seven?
Yeah, two out of the seven. Yeah. Jeez.
If I'd been there all seven, I'm sure it would have been crazy.
I've been living that lifestyle for the last 6 months. It's been like a party every other week. It's been aggressive.
You have to burn out at some point. You have to.
I burned out after the Coast Guard came and raided our last boat. That was like all right, this is the last trip we took in the south of France. We had the Coast Guard board our boat, and, you know, there are some shenanigans going on that they were tipped off about, but luckily everyone escaped alive and no one was taken into custody or anything bad really happened. But it was like, okay, this is, this partying lifestyle can be a little aggressive. Let's maybe tone it back a hair. So
just one hair,
just one hair. Yeah. But, yeah, man, it's been awesome having you on, and, it's always great to reconnect.
So yeah, definitely.
Where can – I know, you know, anyone who's watching this, how can they find out more about you? There's obviously thefearlessman.com is your site.
Yep.
Where else and can they – in the YouTube channel?
YouTube.com/thefearlessman. Those are probably the two best resources. You can get – there's an insane amount of videos, and there's more going up all the time. If you want to find out about any events, definitely go to fearlessman.com. We got we do Fearless Man Lives, which are just big group events where we can come in and we do a 2-day talk, and they're a lot of fun and they're not that expensive. And we have also some online products. You can check those out too. So, but either way, if you want free stuff and you guys just want to learn more, go to the YouTube channel. It's the best resource for that.
Awesome.
So, mm-hmm.
All right, dude. Well, great chatting, and we'll be in touch.
Okay. Take care, buddy.